Snappers, you hear the stories on this show, and you're not even going to believe what's coming up next. We're proud of this. So if you feel what we feel by hearing stories from people down the street and people on the other side of the world, if you become a better person by hearing someone else's story, this is the time to support SNAP. Right now, this moment, snapjudgment.org. Understand, SNAP operates on hope, pixie dust, and your support. And if you join SNAP today with a small monthly donation, I'll send you special members-only thank you gifts that'll put you in the heart of the story. Join SNAP Nation with a small monthly donation at snapjudgment.org. Thanks. Today, from WNYC, SNAP proudly presents SNAP Judgment, live in Oaktown. The world's finest storytellers on one of the nation's grandest stages, Oakland's historic Paramount Theater. Tell everyone, you're busy for the next hour. Yes, we've got you the very best seat in the house. Get ready. SNAP Judgment, live.
Welcome to SNAP Judgment, y'all. Live in Oakland. We finally got to bring it home to Oakland. Oaktown, 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 baby. It's been too long, y'all. We missed you. We missed you. We got some of the world's finest storytellers about to take this stage. Now then, I get to introduce one of your own, Oakland, who was born and raised here, one of the finest storytellers ever to come from these streets. Put your hands together for Don Reed.
I was born and raised in Oakland, California. And my father got around a lot. I mean a lot. And one day, when my parents were still together and I was like 10 years old, he called a family meeting. He said, everybody come in the living room. I gotta tell y'all something, all right now. Everybody's saying, I had another kid by some other woman. That's what they're saying. His name is Daryl. He's a little older than y'all. He's on the front porch right now. Let's meet him. Oh my God, I was in shock. What? My little hardhead brother walked in, eating spoonfuls of Miracle Whip. What's up? A few weeks later, my father said, I got somebody else for y'all to meet. His name is Tony. He's a little older than y'all. He's on the front porch right now. Let's meet him. My brother Tony walked in, a little older than me, but he already knew who he was. He walked right in and he said, nice to meet all you guys, nice to meet all of you. Whose dolls are those over there in the corner? Whose dolls are those? I want to play with those dolls. Is that the Barbie slumber party set or is that the Barbie camper set? My sister said, oh my God, he's so sweet. He wants to play with my dolls. My brother Tony played whatever he wanted to play. Football, basketball, whatever, with all that stuff. He wanted to play hopscotch and double dutch, and he was amazing at double dutch. He'd be running two ropes at the same time and singing crazy nursery rhymes. Abraham Lincoln was a good old man. I said, he fell out the window with this thing in his hand. He said, pardon me, lady, I'm doing my duty. Pull down your drawers and give me some booty. Speed it up, okay? My back is breaking, my belt's too tight, my hips are shaking to the left, to the right. Ungawa, black power, your mama don't take no shower and she stinks! I miss my brother Tony. When we were in junior high school, he's a couple of grades ahead of me. One day they call all the grades out onto the football field. They told all the boys to stand on one side and get in line. And all the girls are standing on another side in line. My brother Tony stood there for what seemed like forever. He looked at me, and then he calmly walked over and got in line with the girls. Nervous laughter for a second, but it quickly dissipated. While the boys' gym teacher shot a look at him, the girls' gym teacher put her arm around him and walked him over to the boys' line. But I could tell he wasn't happy there. Later on, when I was like 16 years old, my parents divorced and my mother remarried this guy who forced us to be in that religion that rhymes with Jehovah's Witnesses. But every Sunday, I went over to my father's house. And as soon as I walked in, there was always a huge party going on. People were partying everywhere. And even though my father told me to be myself, it was easier said than done. I wanted to be cool, but I wasn't cool. I was a nerd. I was a power nerd. But Tony was cool. Tony would be where he always was, in the center of the dance floor, powerfully gay, dancing his ass off. I love coming over to Daddy's house. I love coming over here. You know why? Because Daddy don't judge me. He let me be myself. But you know what? I might have to move over here. Because my mother, she busted me. That's right. She caught me. She walked right in on me. I was like, all innocent. What were you doing? Smoking some weed? I was smoking something, but it wasn't no weed. Then what were you doing? Boy, you know what? You're so naive. Do you realize how naive you is? You are a hella naive, boy. Are you referring to the word naive? Whatever it is, however you spell it, that's what you eat. I miss my brother Tony. Eventually, I moved over to my father's house. All my brothers moved over there, including Tony. And one day I was standing at the bus stop, trying to be cool, and these two big dudes walked up. One of them says, hey, your name is Donnie, right? You one of them Reed brothers, right? Yeah, you one of them Reed brothers. I don't know if you know it, but your brother Daryl got my girl. And right now, me and my boy, we about to get with you. We gonna kick you. I'm like, wait, what do I have to do with it? Just then, I heard Tony's footsteps coming from around the corner. Shh, 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 shh. They didn't know what was about to happen, but I knew. Shh, shh, shh. Donnie, have I walked into the middle of a situation? Is this a situation here? Why y'all looking at each other all beady-eyed, huh? What's going on here, huh? 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 Donnie, why is there so much tension between you and these gentlemen? When the guy said, huh, what you gonna do, faggot? Tony went right to work on both of them. Ah! Start whooping their butt. Tony was not big, but he was wiry and strong and willing to use anything in his repertoire of artillery. Biting, scratching, the windmill move, whatever. Wah! I'm sure if you slowed it down and studied it, it would look like some kind of high-end martial art. And those guys ran up the street. What they didn't know that I knew is that Tony could whoop anybody's butt in the entire neighborhood. Anybody. Tony always watched over me. Going to parties, the bus stop, anywhere. Tony always, always had my back. I miss my brother Tony. You know, he really did have my back at all times, and I always ran to him when I needed to be shielded. But one day, I was sitting in a car with my buddy. He was in the driver's seat. I was in the passenger seat. We were at the lake, Lake Merritt. Beautiful day, sunshiny day. Everybody was there. My buddy said, "Hey, look, there's your brother Tony." And he was about to honk the horn. I said, no, don't call him. He said, "Why not?" That's what I said. I said, "Just don't call him over here, okay?" And I let Tony walk by. Why? I loved him at home, but didn't want to accept him too openly in public. That was not cool. That was not cool at all. Later that night, when I went home, I couldn't even look at him. But he said, "Hey boy, your hair's looking crazy. You want me to braid your hair?" And so I sat down with my back against my brother's knees, and he braided my hair. Like he'd done so many times before, he would braid my hair and we would talk. We talked long after he was done. But that night, we didn't talk. And I didn't tell him I saw him the day at the lake. In fact, I never told him. I miss my brother Tony. After that, I invited Tony everywhere, anywhere. It didn't matter. It just didn't matter. He eventually moved out. Hadn't seen him for 2 years. I was about to head off to UCLA, and I've been out partying. I was standing at the bus stop right there on Broadway. I looked across the street and I saw Tony standing on the corner in a blonde wig and a brown dress with pink specks in it. Off-white heels. I've seen Tony mess around in women's clothing before, but not out in public, not on the street. I guess I was feeling embarrassed or something, even though my father told us to be who we are. I guess I was ready for him to be gay, but I wasn't ready for this. And so I said, "Hey, Tony, what you doing out here?" "I'm working." "Or do you have to do this? Can't you get some other kind of job? I wait tables. Can't you do that?" "It's not that easy, Donnie. People get freaked out by women like me. To get freaked out." And something happened in that moment. I didn't feel embarrassed. I felt my spine straightening up. And all I know I wanted to do was protect her. And so I said, look, Tony, hey, let me get you something to eat. Let's have breakfast. He said, I have to work. I have to make money. I said, I'll give you some money, okay? Give you some money, get you a room, but let's eat and let's just talk, okay? Can we talk? Can we just talk? And so we ate and we talked. And then I said goodnight. So now there are two scenarios of what happened to her. The first scenario is that it might have been drug related. The second scenario, the one that all have discussed was more likely, is that Tony got caught up in what is called a twist. A twist is when a man thinks he's getting one type of hooker, then discovers there's something else and acts out. In this case, the guy acted out violently. I don't know what happened. I don't know. All I know is Tony was found in East Oakland behind a junior high school, face down in a blonde wig. She didn't deserve that. She deserved much better than that. She did. She did. I wish I could have protected her like she protected me all those years. But I couldn't. But I can still hear her say, hey, whose dolls are those over there in the corner? I miss my sister, Tony.
Watch Don Reed's amazing performance for yourself in Technicolor at snapjudgment.org. And please share it with everyone that needs to hear. And know this, you've got a story. Snap can help you tell it. On the stage, the workplace, the page, we're going to show you how to tell your story. Information available right now at snapjudgment.org. You're listening to Snap Judgment live in Oaktown. Stay tuned. Snappers, if you've ever found yourself unable to leave the car, the train, the sidewalk, unable to move until you find out what happens next, support the Snap. Become a member of Snap Nation at snapjudgment.org for just a few dollars a month. Get special gifts that'll help you tell your story. You dig the beat? How about a special funk Snap mixtape? Or take a virtual seat right next to me at a Snap Story meeting. Help us decide what goes in and what stays out of a new episode. Snappers, if you feel what we feel, if this matters to you, and I know that it does, join us, because it doesn't happen any other way. Snapjudgment.org. Thanks. Welcome back to Snap Judgment, live in Oaktown. Already in progress.
She has this amazing podcast called Good Muslim, Bad Muslim. And I'm just going to spoiler alert right now.
She's Muslim. And she's welcome on this stage. We're not going to send her anywhere. We're not going to build any walls or anything like that. Because this is Oakland. She's welcome on this stage. Please put your hands together for Zara Norabash.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. That's a Muslim chick. Where are my Muslims at? Yeah, Muslim pride, make some more noise! All right. I'm learning about hell. And I'm definitely going to go there. It's the end of summer in 1991. I just turned 11 and we're in Danville, California. I'm at this Muslim Iranian summer school where everybody's like me. Nobody is cool. Everyone here wears black. I love black. And all the girls cover their hair in this headscarf called hijab. So I never have to do my hair. Mrs. Bahari says that under the eyes of the Ayatollah Khomeini, everyone is cool. He seems like a really nice guy. She says that for my whole life, there's an angel on my shoulder, tallying up my good and bad deeds. What a jerk. It's really embarrassing to have to ask this, but I have to ask. Mrs. Bahari, say that when a Muslim kid goes to sleepovers with her American friends, she maybe eats pepperoni pizza. Zahra, are you doing that? Ew, no, never. But say that I did do that, and then I lied to my teacher when she asked me if I did. Is that another negative point? Every negative point is one day in hell. A day in hell for every lie? But Zahra, you have the power to change your future. You can wipe away your bad deeds with good deeds. Heaven points. What gets you the most heaven points? If you were to die in the Revolutionary War fighting for Iran, you would go to heaven for sure. What's a second way? That afternoon, I know what to do. I go to my friend Christine's house. Knock, knock, knock. Hey, Christine. So have you ever converted to Islam before? What's Islam? It's my religion, but I'm Christian. Islam is pretty much the same as Christianity. But instead of Jesus, there's also Muhammad. And Muhammad came after Jesus, and he saved a bunch of people from these really bad guys. Plus, if you convert to Islam, we both get heaven points. Heaven points? How many? 1 million! Christine goes and gets her sister, and we all go over to my grandma's house. She converts them, we do namaz, they say the Shahada, I convert them, 1 million heaven points, 1 million heaven points, we get Casey, we convert her, another million heaven points! It's really easy. You can help me out. All you have to do is say, La ilaha illallah. 3,000 million heaven points! Creeping Sharia in the house! Take that, Donald Trump! The next weekend is our final exams at Farsi school, but I didn't care. I have millions of heaven points. I did not study. Besides, Dad said that if I just write on the test, and then the Shah was a tyrant, for every answer, I'll get, like, most of them right. Mrs. Bahari hands me my test. I look down, and I realize, oh shit, it's in Farsi. Cursive Farsi. All the other kids are scribbling away. I'm so screwed. But it's okay, because everybody knows that if you look at Mrs. Bahari with really big eyes, she feels bad for you and she gives you the answer. She comes over to me right away. Zaharjan, is everything okay? Oh, Mrs. Bahari, I just don't understand these questions. Zahra, mizuni ke ne mizuna. Oh, no, I don't want the answer. I just don't understand the question. She leans in so the other kids can't hear and translates. It says, if a mother wears hijab but her daughter does not, will the mother burn in hell for her? No. Because in Islam, everybody is responsible for their own sins. No, that's not right. What? I know. Wait, but I have a million heaven points. I converted my friend. Oh, good. But what about my mom? She will burn in hell. My mom wears hijab every day, and she never said that I had to. I mean, I guess I never asked her. I wear hijab when I'm here, just not at my American school. I will someday, just not in junior high. Listen, I was gonna explain all of this to God when I got there. But you're telling me that they're gonna set her on fire before I even get there? Yes. This is it. And then Mrs. Bahari says, but Zahra, you have the power to change your future. In Islam, once you know of a sin, you can change your future that moment. That afternoon, when Dad picks me up, it's pouring rain and I'm a drenched mess. I can't believe that all this time that I was just playing with my friends, I was actually sending my mom to hell. From now on, this is it. If I wear a hijab, from now on, I'll be good. For real this time. Dad notices I'm pretty out of it. Hey, Zara, are you okay? Did you do okay on your test? What? Yeah, sure, Dad. Okay. You did okay. 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 Okay, Zahra. Okay is okay for Dad. Good job, Zahra. Good job. Come on, man. You're done with the Farsi school. Let's celebrate. You're gonna be in junior high tomorrow. Let's go to Blockbuster and get a movie. We celebrate. This is it. We pull into the Blockbuster. We get out of the car. And I fix my hijab. And I tighten my hijab and tuck in my bangs. And I take a deep breath. Dad laughs. Hey, Zahra, you're still wearing your thing, man. You're not in Farsi school anymore. Well, Dad, I'm gonna wear it. What, are you cold or something, man? No, because Mrs. Bahari said that if I don't wear hijab, then mom's gonna burn in hell, and...
Whoa.
Nobody is burning at the hell. You know, Zahra, your mom and I talked about this a long time ago, and we don't want this for you. Wearing hijab is... it's very difficult. Difficult? Difficult? I'm gonna let mom burn in hell because it's difficult? And so I wore hijab to Blockbuster that day. the proudest hijab-wearing 11-year-old to ever wear a hijab at a Blockbuster. Everybody kept looking at me and looking away and looking at me and looking away and looking at me and looking away. I got so uncomfortable that I just started to speak in English really loudly. Hey, Dad! Isn't it funny how we're all US citizens in here? Yep, all of us. Hey, Dad, how about this monster truck rally video? It'll go perfect with a bag of Frito-Lay. They are not at all disgusting. And of course, we'll be making these purchases with our American Express card that we were able to obtain as tax-paying citizens of this fine nation. And my dad was like, hey, Zara, why are you talking so loud? Oh, Dad! Zara, you know your mom only likes action movies. Who is this man? What is that? What is going on? Bokosh, 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 boom, boom, boom. I like a romance. It's nice, it's relaxed. In this one, the dances with the wolves. There's a romance, and then they kill somebody, and your mom be happy. Oh, Dad, what a Kevin Costner classic! All it took was 8 minutes at Blockbuster, and I was having second thoughts. I call up my friend Christine. Hey, Christine, so on the first day of school tomorrow, I'm gonna look a little different. Well, it might be a little weird. It's this thing I have to wear for my religion. Look, you don't have to hang out with me any more than usual, but will you still hang out with me? Hold on, Christine. My mom comes bursting through the door with bags and bags of Mervyn's back to school shopping. Zara! Hey, Zara! Listen, Christine, I gotta go. I'll see you tomorrow. Zara, look! I got some nice clothes for you in nice bright colors. You've been wearing black all summer. Look! I reach into the bag and pull out a hot pink turtleneck. And then I look up and my mom is holding a huge, shiny pair of banana yellow parachute pants? You got me MC Hammer pants? Where did you even find those? Clarence! Can you believe that? Thanks, Mom. This is really pretty. But I'm already doing something different on the first day of school tomorrow. Oh, Zahra, your dad told me about that. I don't want you to do that. Do you know where you're going? Zahra, we don't believe that. I mean, Zahra, I wear hijab because I like it. Because it's my tradition. I'm comfortable wearing it. I've been wearing it since I was 9 years old. I feel naked without it. It is my tradition. It does not have to be your tradition. But Mrs. Bahari said, that's Mrs. Bahari's Islam. She interprets the Quran one way, we see it another. You can do that? Zahra, religion is like a fart. Everybody thinks theirs does not smell, but it does. So the next day at school, I get out of the car and Christine locks eyes on my yellow MC Hammer pants. And I see her eyes go up, down, up, down, pink, poof, Oh my God, Zara! What are you doing? You look like a Skittle. Wait, is this the outfit you were talking about? Is this for your religion? Yes. Yes, this is for my religion.
Big love to Zara Norbash. Zara, it's one half of the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast. I'll let you decide which half. See this performance yourself in living color on the Snap Judgment Facebook page. Just sign in there and know this. When Snap returns, the closer, James Judd is taking us for a trip around the world, and we're going first class. When Snap Judgment, live in Oaktown, continues, stay tuned. All right, Snap Nation, you've heard it from me already. I'm with the Oakland School for the Arts Literary Department, and they're going to tell you how they're inspired, enthralled, and they listen to this show. What do you guys want to tell them?
Feel the snap!
One more time!
Feel the snap!
Say it again!
Feel the snap!
Feel the snap, Snap Nation. Do me a favor. We're going to say snapjudgment.org.
Ooh, okay.
All right? One, two, three.
Snapjudgment.org!
Yeah! From WNYC, welcome back to Snap Judgment, live in Oaktown. My name is Don Washington. Please, remember to tell everyone to leave you alone for the next few minutes. This is your time. You deserve this. In our next piece, it does mention sex, drugs, and rock and roll, but nothing crazy. Still, you should know. Snap Judgment, live. It's about that time. We're going to bring out the closer. That's right. Please, put your hands together. Show some love for James Judd.
Thank you. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Oh my gosh, I'm James Judd. I just want to... Actually, could I have like a little tinkle music? Just something soft and cocktail-y? We're gonna wrap up the show by taking things in a little different direction with a show so, a story so thin and flimsy and self-centered, even a Kardashian might go, huh? Well, there wasn't too much to that one, was there? And this is how it goes. The instant that I turned 40, I began to freak out about turning 50. I'm gonna be 50, I'm gonna be 50, I'm gonna be 50. It was just like this loop that would not turn off in my head. And I'm not the type of person to freak out about birthdays or getting older in general. I never thought I'd have a midlife crisis, but this just overwhelms me. I feel like I've got this dark cloud over me. And by the time I turn 41, I've taken to stopping in front of any mirror that I pass and going, well, I guess this is what 50 looks like. By 41, anybody on my Facebook page that puts a picture of their kids going to college or, God forbid, a grandbaby, I'm just like, unfriend. This cannot happen to me. I cannot be this old. To this day, I have nightmares that tomorrow are the SATs and I don't have enough number two pencils. I can't have friends with grandbabies. And then I was about maybe 43 and a friend of mine who was already 50 told me that he had his balls lifted. It's a thing, you can get your balls lifted. And he was like, I feel great, I've got the tight sack of an 18-year-old and I feel young again. You gotta do it. No. Well, maybe. And then, the worst was I was maybe 44 and two friends that I went to school with dropped dead of heart attacks. And I was like, oh my God, I need to get a bucket list. I know, it would be, I should have gone like, oh, that's sad, and I should get a treadmill and some Lipitor. But I was like, I need a bucket list. And I gotta do as much of it as I can before I turn 50, because then all bets are off. Now, I know that all of us, really all people are the same, no matter where you come from, no matter what your background, no matter how old you are, everybody's number one thing on their bucket list is the same, which is to die having had sex with someone from every country on the planet, right? Right, people are people. But I got as far as Puerto Rico, and then I married the Puerto Rican, and then after that, I just quit traveling because, but why? But now I think, I gotta see the world. I haven't seen the world. I wanna do things that I can do while I can still move my limbs. I wanna climb the Rockies. I wanna swim in a lake. I wanna cross the Mall of America. And then I wanna see endangered wildlife in its natural habitat. I wanna see a giraffe in Africa, a penguin in Antarctica, Cher in Las Vegas. Again. But I think, how am I gonna do this? I get a call offering me a job on a cruise ship, a 10-day cruise, free for me and my husband, Eric, if I will perform at night on the cruise ship. So I'll be like a passenger slash performer hybrid. And here's the best part. It begins in Athens, the Colosseum, check. No, that's Rome. It begins in Rome, the Colosseum. It ends in Athens, which is the Acropolis. Yes, awesome. But the best part is that it goes to Egypt and you get to see the Great Pyramids. Oh my God, the Great Pyramids. Oh, the Great, I can't believe it. I mean, when I was a kid, when I was from like maybe 9 to 11, I was just obsessed with Egypt and all things Egyptology. And I wanted to be an archaeologist. And then when I was like 12, I decided that I wanted to be an exorcist. But that's not really here or there. Just know it, embrace it, and set that to the side. But there's a catch, and it's a big one. This is a 3,000-passenger lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender cruise. An all-gay cruise. Now, by applause, how many of you have been on a big gay cruise? Yeah, so like half of you, right? And, well, for those of you who haven't, the few of you, let me just tell you that the gay cruises are very, very different. Now, the ships are exactly the same ships, but everything that happens on the ship is completely different. First of all, 3,000 gays means 2,997 gay men and 3 lesbians you see get on the boat the first day and then you never see them again. I think they, like, send them up to the putting green with a bottle of gin and then they just lock them in there. I don't know. I never made it up there. But, for instance, they say that on a regular people cruise, the liquor tab for the whole ship for the whole week is rumored to be about $150,000 for a week of drinking on a regular cruise. On an all-gay cruise, they say $250,000 a day. I don't know who is running that ship because everyone in uniform is working a blender. Even the captain's got his hand on the wheel and the other one's making daiquiris. There's a liquor barge which follows behind the ship so they can restock the vodka at any moment. I tell you, if the Titanic had been a gay cruise, those gays, they would have seen that iceberg, they would have crunched it up, they would have put it in the blender, would add some pina colada. Pass it down. And if it did charge a sink, those 3 lesbians would have appeared. They would have built a half a dozen lifeboats in an hour. We are not going down. So then you've got everybody is just drunk. Now picture 2,997 gay men in Speedos crammed up against a swimming pool for dancing from sunrise to sunrise, it never stops. It's Ted Cruz's fantasy. Yeah? and Marco Rubio's not so secret past. I met my wife at a phone party. Oh, honey, no, you didn't. No. And they're washing down all manner of drugs, X, MDMA, GHB, all the alphabet drugs, mushrooms, you know, whatever. And, gosh. You know what, this is the sad part. Guys, stop for a second. This is really sad. Speaking of the dancing, there's always, tell me if I'm right, guys. There's always one old queen voguing around the clock, right? There's always one sad, bedraggled queen who doesn't know it's time to hang up his disco shoes voguing. Oh, it's so sad. Yeah, back to me. And food. Okay, regular people cruises, they're all about obsessive eating. Not on the gay cruise, nobody eats. At least nobody eats carbs. The midnight buffet is 1,000 guys on ecstasy, in line, twitching for that one random tray of steamed cauliflower. Those cakes and cookies and mounds of dessert, they just toss them off the back of the boat at sunrise. Huge schools of fat, obese fish follow me behind the boat. And these cruises are dangerous. People die on every single sailing. They overdose or they fall overboard. If they ever offer you free ice cream on the top deck, it's because they're moving a body down. They need to make more room in the freezer. And then, like, once a day, there for 10 minutes, there's a place where you on the ship where you can get cell phone service, and they all run up trying to get that bar, and they get up there and they clutter there and they call their dog sitters and scream at them. Frenchies are very sensitive. The black one is Cooper, the white one is Anderson. And my shows are not going well because they're scheduled to begin. Well, first of all, I can't participate in any of this because, you know, call me crazy, but I like to perform sober. I mean, not for you all, obviously, but, you know, for you, I take out my contacts, a few shots of whiskey, and, you know, we're good to go. But on a classy job like a gay cruise, I like to be sober. Now, Eric is having a great time. He's basically moved onto, like, the mojito deck and into the hot tub and having a blast. But I'm miserable. First of all, in my dressing room, there's a sign that says, performers may not have sex with the passengers. And I'm like, what? Anyway, so they're not going well. And because they're scheduled to begin right at that moment when most of the passengers have just taken their drugs for the night, and they're sitting in the audience anxiously waiting for them to kick in. And they're like worried, like, what did I take? Did I take too much? Did I not take enough? And then about two-thirds of the way through, they just start going off like popcorn. Pow, 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 pow. And they'll start laughing hysterically. Ha, 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 or crying. And then they just get up and walk out of the theater, usually by crossing the stage. Oh, it's a mess. Thanks, Obama. But I just grit my teeth. I think the pyramids, the pyramids, the pyramids, the pyramids. Finally, the big day arrives, and we the boat docks in Alexandria, and we get off, and they're going to put everybody on the ship on this just army of 50-person vans, and we're going to drive 4 hours to Cairo. And the captain says, listen, guys, before we take off, I just want to say, this is a conservative country, you know, maybe tone it down a little bit. No big wigs, no funny hats, no caftans. I'm like, well, I got to go change. So we get on the bus and we're riding, and about 3 hours into it, the tour guide lady starts in about the camels. If you want to ride a camel when we get to the pyramids, you got to get off the bus. You got to be in the camel line right away. You got to be in the camel line right away. When we get to Cairo, you got to get off the bus. You got to be in the camel line. You got to be ready to ride the camels. As soon as we get there, you got to get in the line. You got to ride the camels. If you're going to ride the camels, you got to get off the bus. I'm like, Jesus Christ! In my whole life, I have never given one thought to riding a camel. But by the time we get there, I'm so freaked out that I've left this off my bucket list. I'm like, get out of the way! Get out of the way! Get out! Eric is gone. I don't know where he is, but I'm like, oh, there's, you know, 3,000 other guys. I'll get another husband. It's my one chance to earn a camel! And I make it to the camel line. I'm like, yes! And there's a tall Bedouin man, and he leads me over to a place in the desert where there are two camels kneeling in the sand, tied together by a rope. And he passes me off to this little Bedouin boy who, you know, with some trouble, he helps me, like, get on the camel. And I'm sitting there, waiting for it to start, when these two other guys from the boat come up. And they walk up to the Bedouin kid, and they say, we wish to ride our camel together. Is that going to be a problem? Will it be a problem because we're two grown men and wish to ride one camel together? Because the ISPE would like to speak to your highest level supervisor. And the kid is looking at them like, get on the camel. Oh, victory for us. So the guys get on the camel, and the Bedouin man comes back, the tall one, and he gives like the signal for the ride to start. And one of the guys in front of me says, excuse me, sir, does our camel have a name? He says, oh yes, your camel is the most beautiful camel. She is Elizabeth Taylor. Oh, Elizabeth Taylor, she won two Oscars. She played Cleopatra, that's a really good sign. Let's get a picture of a selfie with a camel. Great, I say, excuse me, does my camel have a name? He says, your camel is, Snoopy. Well, the Bedouin kid, like, flicks his little whip and the two camels start to get up. Snoopy just pops right up. But Liz is having some trouble. But the guys immediately are like, oh, the camel's going too fast. Oh, wait, slow the camel down. The camel's trying to kill us. I kid you not, this camel is so old. I think it was there when the pyramids were built. It's got like one frosty eye and a big tooth and a purple tongue. And it's sort of like, lurching toward whatever catches that frosty eyes fantasy. Oh, the camel, slow the camel down. By the way, the pyramids, where are they? They are in the background and getting further away every second. As a kid leads us out into a desert, which is essentially a trash dump. It's like car parts, a refrigerator. At one point, one of the guys goes, oh, look, honey, there's a sleeping horse. And there's a horse amongst the trash like this. It's not a sleeping horse, it's a dead horse. Well, suddenly Snoopy gets an itch. And I know that this is an itch because my little terrier dog does the same thing. He throws his head directly backwards, looks me right in the eye, opens his mouth and goes, "Wah!" So I start scratching furiously. Good Snoopy, look forward, focus Snoopy, look forward. Well, Snoopy cannot. And he just runs forward and starts flinging his head against the legs of the guys in front of me who are like, get your camel off us! Get your camel off of us! Well, what am I gonna do? I can't do anything. And then right that moment, I feel my open-toed sandaled foot go thunk right into something hot and wet. Oh, mighty Ra, oh, god of the sun, please don't let me look down and see my foot up Liz Taylor's ass. Because up until that point, I didn't know there could be a worse kind of camel toe. Yeah, but there is. There is. Well, the Bedouin kid just like cuts the rope between the two camels, and Snoopy just takes off running. I don't know how to ride a galloping camel. This camel is possessed. And I think, ow, ow, ow. My exorcism thinks, the power of Christ compels you. The power of Christ compels you. And once we're far away from everybody, Snoopy just sits down I think, well, what am I supposed to do now? Do I get off the camel? Do I stay on the camel? If I get off the camel and I leave, do I have to pay for the camel? What's going to happen? Eventually, I am rescued by the bus, which is already loaded with everybody else. And they're furious because now we're, you know, late. And I get on the bus, and everyone's giving me, like, the stink eye. And even Eric has his sunglasses on. He's looking out the window like he doesn't know me, even though there's only one empty seat on the bus. It's a very awkward moment when I have to look back at them and say, does anybody have a wet wipe? But it turned out to be a good thing because camel poo on my shoe made me realize that I needed to lighten up a little bit and not be chasing these rock piles trying to postpone an inevitability that, you know, is coming anyway. Well, today I am 50. In fact, I'm almost 51. Look at me, I'm fantastic. I have grown the perfect dad bod without ever having to have children. You want to know the secret to looking young in ever all of your pictures? Don't ever take pictures with young people. Only take them with old people. Life is fantastic at 50. I don't care about anything I don't feel like caring about. It's great because look at me, look where I am. I'm on this stage right now in this incredible theater with this amazing band on National Public Radio with Snap Judgment here with you. So for everyone who ever was or will be 50, strike a pose. Strike a pose. Strike a pose.
James Judd Snappas. See this video, uncut, unedited, with all the bad words left in. Share it, live it. It's at snapjudgment.org. The original music you've heard during the stories was composed by the maestro Alex Mandel and performed live by Alex and the Snap Players, David Brandt and Tim Frick. Snap Judgment is supported by the Snap Unleash Your Genie and Tell Your Own Story Society. We're going to show you how to join the team and tell your story. In the bar, the stage, the workplace, the page, you have got a story. Snap can help you tell it. Information available right now at snapjudgment.org. And even though this is not the news, no way is this the news. In fact, you can go to Egypt, get your foot stuck up a camel's hind parts, and still not be as far away from the news as this is. But this is WNYC.